Frank Schaefer is the father of a former Marine. He has written three very successful nonfiction books about the military. I think his best one was called Keeping Faith, a father-son story about love in the United States Marine Corps. He also wrote Faith of Our Sons, a father's wartime diary, and also Voices from the Front. For each of those books, I have had him on the show to talk about them and to talk about his experience of being a dad of a boy who graduated and went off to join the United States Marine Corps. His son John put in 5 years in Semper Fi land, many of those nervous years for Frank as a dad. But he's written proudly about his son and is back now with a brand new book called AWOL, The Unexcused Absence of America's Upper Classes from Military Service and How It Hurts Our Country. Frank, welcome back to KMOX.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. So when you say the unexcused absence of America's upper classes from military service, you're talking about since the end of the draft 3 decades ago, right?
Yeah, that's correct. There's been a big change in America as far as military service goes that I first encountered when my son joined the Marine Corps, and my friends who tend to be, you know, swanky members of the North Shore of Boston area, a lot of people who teach at Harvard and writers and others, started acting as if he had gone to prison or been busted for drugs or something. You know, what a waste, what a shame. You know, you'd have no idea that it was a legitimate option for a young man to volunteer. So I started asking a lot of questions, and cut a long story short, AWOL, The Unexcused Absence of America's Upper Classes from Military Service and How It Hurts Our Country, came out of those experiences. And really what it is, it's an answer to the people who say, let somebody else do all the heavy lifting, not my kid, not with my child, anybody but me, and the folks who have politicized our military to the point where they feel virtuous for not serving, as if somehow this is a protest. And so really what happened after Vietnam was that, first of all, military service got politicized, and secondly, the spirit of the student deferments of the Vietnam era during the draft were simply carried forward. So just to give you the contrast, in 1956, almost half the graduating class of Princeton went on and did some military service. And now less than 9 did, and Princeton leads the Ivy League this year with 9 students who have gone on to be in the military. That's what's happened. That's what's changed. The ROTC has been kicked off campuses, and our elites just simply never get asked. And the military's played a kind of a cynical game recently themselves, and that is they've given up asking. They go to the heartland, they go to the small towns, they go to the inner cities, and that's what they find to be more productive, and basically it's middle and lower middle class Americans who bear the brunt, and the upper classes act like the military has to do with them.
But Frank, I got to bring something up here, because you and I have talked before, particularly about the books you've written about your son in the military. You were not thrilled when he decided to join the Marine Corps either.
Yeah, absolutely. And so in AWOL, that I co-wrote with Kathy Ross Duquet, who used to be in the Clinton White House, she came at it from a very liberal position, wound up marrying a Marine and changed her point of view about the military. And I'm the same. I've never been quite as liberal and anti-military as Kathy was. Her first encounter with the military is when she was at Bryn Mawr. She got arrested for protesting at a military base. But, you know, I was not thrilled at all. So for me, it's been a learning curve. And AWOL doesn't point the finger and says, hey, you're bad people because you didn't serve. It says, look, we are in exactly the same position that a lot of Americans are. We just never even thought of this until we had our own flesh and blood and uniform, and then we're terribly proud of them, and also saw the very good things it did for our family in connecting us with our country, in the maturing process in my son's case, and the idea of service. And really what we're asking people to do when they read AWOL is, look, start fresh with your ideas about the military. Look at what it really is. Look at what it does for our country. Don't politicize it. Don't think this is all about George Bush or what you think of the war in Iraq. Look, take the case of my son. He signed up before 9/11. He signed up to serve his country, not to fight in any particular war. How did he know a few months later planes were going to be slammed into the World Trade Center? A kid that signs up today is signing up to help America, not fight George Bush's war or make a political statement. It's like jury duty. It's like paying taxes. We don't pick and choose and say, we're only going to take what we like or what we approve of, or we're going to wait till our country's perfect before we obey the rule of law. And what we're saying in AWOL is, look, it's time that this process becomes democratic again, becomes fair again, becomes a level playing field, and that we stop playing this game where the people who profit most from our system have the least when it comes to contributing to who defends us. So, you know, we won't accept it if only one kind of American did jury duty or paid taxes, and really it's become unacceptable to really have one demographic doing most of the heavy lifting for the rest of us.
One of the problems that I think the military's had in the last three decades is the fact that during the Vietnam War and during many wars before that, we did have conscription. We had the draft. People were grabbed out of their normal American everyday lives and taken overseas, or they had to come up with student deferments, or daddy had to pull some strings if he possibly could. Mommy had to pull whatever strings she could, and that did happen with many people, some of them in leadership positions in this country, some of them just in average everyday American suburbs. That was a major thing tearing this country apart. Are you suggesting we go back to that, Frank?
I'm suggesting that when everybody thought it was a great idea that we had an all-volunteer military after Vietnam, everyone sighed with relief. People who wanted to serve could serve. People who didn't want to serve didn't have to. And never the twain shall meet. We started out with abolishing the draft for political reasons, but now it's become a kind of a class warfare. And that is, you have one class of Americans who are serving, another class who, by and large, are not. And the ones who are not serving aren't all not serving for political reasons. They're not serving because no one's asking them. I mean, ROTC has been kicked off campus, and I think what we need to go back to is a less selfish view of serving our country. What we propose in AWOL, the unexcused absence of America's upper classes for military service, is not a return to the pre-1973 draft, but a return to a time when it is expected of people to do something for your country. And that can include a non-military component. Now, at the end of the book, Kathy and I disagree. I actually think we ought to reinstate a draft, but with a non-military component. So no one has an excuse for not serving their country just because they don't want to be in the military. Then they've got to do something else. They've got to go rescue victims in a hurricane. They've got to fight forest fires. They've got to help in the inner city to teach and to bring literacy campaigns to people who need them. But really, we can't have two Americas where one group of young people come out of swanky private high schools or good public schools and go straight off to great colleges and then great jobs and start landing that big salary, chasing money, prestige, and another group does the serving and helps people. It's got to become, again, something of an obligation where all of us look at our culture as a community and see what we can do. And the military does wonderful things for people. It is not just a war-fighting machine. I mean, you know, I know Marines who came back after two back-to-back deployments in the Middle East, and 2 weeks later they were down rescuing victims from Hurricane Katrina. This is wrong. We shouldn't have a country where all the same people always do the big, hard jobs, and the rest of us just go around like there's a party going on, no war, no place to serve. This is what I object to, and as you pointed out, when my son volunteered, I was not pleased at first, and really, he taught me a lesson. I was humbled by that experience, and not only became a big fan of the United States Marine Corps, and wrote that book, Keeping Faith, A Father-Son Story About Love in the United States Marine Corps, but really took a new life at what I was doing. So instead of just writing the novels I was writing, I started trying to write about our men and women and pay tribute to them in books like Keeping Faith that I wrote with my son. And recently I've been down on Paris Island, and I've got a novel coming out this autumn called Baby Jack about a Marine who's killed from an upper-class family that didn't want him serving, and they go through all the fury and reactions people would, and really another way to look at this issue. So, you know, this is something that has really become a cause for me in the sense that I just think it's wrong that some people do all the work for the rest of us and the rest of us get off scot-free. We have to change it. That's what AWOL is about.
Talking with Frank Schaefer, he and Kathy Roth-Duque have written this book, AWOL, and we're going to include your phone calls in a moment at 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. What was the reaction of your neighbors and your friends when John decided to, right out of high school, not go to college, but to put on the uniform, go to Paris Island, and become a United States Marine?
Well, as you know, because you read Keeping Faith, A Father-Son Story About Love in the United States Marine Corps, the reaction was, what a waste. But my reaction was different. I started getting those boot camp letters and basically was converted, if you want to put it that way. And that is, I came to see that he was facing challenges and overcoming things that I've never done in my life. And as he served through those 5 years and went to war twice in Afghanistan and on one mission to Iraq and another one to the Horn of Africa for short stints, and the Afghan campaign, he was there for, you know, 7 months and then 5 months and so forth and so on, it was a maturing process for our whole family. I mean, just to put it bluntly, and I talk about this in AWOL, you know, we became less selfish, less self-centered. I'll give you a small example. I'm the kind of person who always lived on the edge of my town, let somebody else go to the town meetings, let somebody else stand up and talk about what we ought to do for our new sewage treatment plant, whatever it might be. Don't get involved. I'm too busy. I'm writing my novels. I've got my career. Well, I changed that because, you know, I'm in a small town. If I'm not involved, who's going to be involved? You know, my son's out there wearing the uniform. It changed the way I looked at my community. I put a bumper sticker on my car, you know, the Marine Corps bumper sticker. I started meeting people I'd never met before. People come up to me in parking lots and gas stations and say, you know, my son's a Marine or I served. And suddenly I was connected to a whole different community. And it was one of the best things that's happened to my life. It changed the way I look at our country. And I don't see this in a political way. I see this simply as a matter of serving your country. That's why people volunteer. They don't volunteer to serve George Bush. And look, the reverse is true. When Bill Clinton was president and we weren't in Iraq, they weren't signing up in the Ivy Leagues then either. You know, the ROTC was still kicked off campus when there was a Democrat in office and not George Bush. So when people say, well, we don't like the war in Iraq and that's why we won't go, well, what about the war in Afghanistan before Iraq? Nobody was signing up for that either. What about when Clinton was president? People weren't signing up. The fact of the matter is our upper classes have decided it's somebody else's job.
All right, let me include some phone calls here. 314-436-7900, toll-free 800-925-1120. Julie, you're on the Paul Harris Show. Say hi to Frank Schaefer.
Hi.
Hey.
I just wanted to comment on the man who wrote the book. Like earlier, he said that the people that go to the private colleges or whatever, you know, they're not really seeing the same side of the world that these people are that are volunteering to go into the Army or ROTC or whatever. And I would just like to say that I went to a private top 10 college, and to get into that college, I had to do so much community service and so many activities that benefit the community, like Red Cross, blood drives, Halloween events, drawing in kids for the community, Girl Scout events, you know. And once I got into this college, many of my daily activities centered around helping for funds and blood drives and, you know, so many things that benefit people throughout the world. When we had the giant floods and the whole New Orleans incident, the week after that happened, you know, we sent a whole crew, and many of my friends went down there for this, down to help with that situation. When we had the Sri Lanka tsunami, we sent over 10 of our students that, like, I knew two of them, to help them out. So I think that we are getting involved with the community and the world, just maybe not in the same way the soldiers are.
Well, what's your name, by the way?
Julie,
you make a really, really good point. And in fact, one of the things we say in AWOL, and I hope you read the book because you'll see that it's not a one-note book at all, is that 2 points. One, I think our political leaders have really dropped the ball on underestimating the idealism of people like you and students in schools. The fact of the matter is they're just not asked to serve in the military. Now, there's lots of other ways to serve, and in fact, at the end of AWOL, we have a whole chapter that goes into non-military alternatives for service for people who would sign up for a national service program and or be drafted into it, whichever way it went. Our point is not that people in the top colleges are bad people or don't care about others or never do anything for anybody. Our point is that they're not asked to serve in the military anymore, and other people are. And when you have a situation where one group is asked to give everything and another group is asked to give nothing, that's not good. This is a democracy. We ought to be on a level playing field. So, you know, God bless people who get out and help others and are in community programs. We need more of that, not less. But when it comes down to service in our military, it needs to be a level playing field, and that's what we're saying in AWOL. Not that other people are doing nothing, but that the playing field is not level when it comes to who goes out and risks their lives for this country.
All right, Julie, thank you for your call. Frank argues that we need either a draft back in this country to force people into military service or into some sort of community service or national service or something like that, particularly those members of the privileged classes in this country who are not making up anything near the percentages in our military that they used to. Has that hurt the military itself, Frank?
Yeah, I think it has, in some subtle ways and some not-so-subtle ways. Look, let's just be blunt. If George Bush's daughters and Hillary Clinton's daughter and the son of the CEO of the New York Times were out there in an unarmored Humvee patrolling in Baghdad, there's a lot of people who might have given some better thought to some of the planning. I think it's also hurt in the feedback loop. You know, people don't know people in the military. The people who do the most of the talking in this country and the most of the writing and the most of the influencing when it comes to voting and who runs, the political elite, the media, the entertainers, tend to not even know someone in the military often. And if they do, it's just very arm's length, you know. The fact of the matter is the feedback loop's been cut. Look, when you had a lot of Princeton and Harvard and Yale grads, you know, in the military writing back to their parents, when you had Franklin Roosevelt's kids serving in the Second World War and Harry Hopkins, his chief advisor's kids serving, the feedback loop was direct. It went straight to the heart, straight to the gut. This wasn't somebody else's war and we're all in a party. It would be our war. These are our kids out there. So that cutting the feedback loop to the influencers in society has not been good for the military. And I think the other way it's hurting the military is it makes us have a very short attention span. When we don't have any skin in the game and we don't have something on the line besides our opinion politically about an engagement, it means that, you know, either we're impatient or too ready to get into a conflict on the one hand. You know, the military ought to be sent in, they ought to do something. Or on the other hand, we run out of patience because we're not getting any direct feedback from kids on the ground who are out there. For instance, you know, I have a huge email correspondence with people in the military because of the other books I've written on the subject and the op-eds and the other things I've done. And as a result, I'm getting emails from people in Baghdad and in Kabul and who are serving and are on the ground who are telling me things sometimes I don't read in the media. It's very direct. It's straight to the heart. That feedback loop for a lot of people has been cut, because they really don't know anybody in the military. So I think there's lots of ways it hurts the military. And then I think finally, in the area of legitimacy, it hurts the military. If you don't know anyone in the military serving, if you have no friend who's in the war situation, basically you don't know the people involved. You can think anything of those people. Whereas, for instance, I know a lot of folks in the military. My son was in the military. When I hear a story about prisoner abuse or something like that, I see it in the proportion of all the good people I know. The faces and the names and the mothers and the fathers come to mind. By cutting that link, the military is set adrift from the rest of our culture. It might as well be living in a gated community somewhere. So I think it's really bad in the long run that our military is not more integrated into the general society and especially the upper classes, and it's one of the points we make in AWOL.
You know, I'm trying to go backwards through the presidents to see who has had a child who is serving in the active duty military while they were president. Certainly not this president, certainly not Clinton, certainly not the previous president, although, you know, his son did serve in that National Guard thing. Then you go back to before him, it was Ronald Reagan. None of his children were in the military. Right. Before him, you go to Jimmy Carter. Amy wasn't old enough to be in there. Then there's Gerald Ford, who I don't think had any kids in the military. Richard Nixon's kids were not in there. So you got to go back to
Johnson had a son-in-law.
LBJ's son-in-law.
Right. But, you know, you've got...
Even back further than that, JFK, his kids weren't old enough to have served. Eisenhower... Right.
But, you know, when Eleanor Roosevelt's writing in her diary, she says, you know, my husband Franklin is so glad all of our children volunteered before the war started because he'd be ashamed to be sending other people's kids into combat. Look, our sense of national honor has changed. And one of the things we talk about in AWOL is that there was a time not too long ago in American history, believe it or not, in 1917 when the draft was introduced in World War I, the reason given in Congress, and I know this is going to be hard to believe, but it's true, was that too many kids from best colleges in the upper classes were volunteering. They said, you know, basically our Ivy League schools are being emptied by idealistic young people going off, we're going to lose a whole generation. We've got to institute the draft so we get a few more working class people in the military.
That was after World War One.
That was World War One, and we've gone from there where, you know, Princeton has 9 people in the ROTC, and they lead the they're leading the Ivy League. I mean, you know, it's really, there's been a real sea change in American history, and it's flown under the radar. And I've got to admit, I would not have even thought of this, and it wouldn't have meant anything to me more than just another political issue if it hadn't been for my own son serving, that we talked about earlier, that we talk about in the book, Keeping Faith. And in that book, what I talk about is just how I started out not only disapproving of his service, but almost trying to talk him out of it, wondering what he had done. You know, his brother went to Georgetown, his sister went to NYU. Why aren't you doing this? You're bright. You have a good academic career ahead of you. You're smart. You're an athlete. Why are you wasting your life? I went from that to really being ashamed of myself and thinking, look, this is insane. Here's a guy who wants to serve his country, and you're not encouraging him. And when I learned about the Marine Corps firsthand through him and through all the other Marines I knew, you know, I became an enormous fan of not only the Marine Corps and what they do, but how they change people for the better. I mean, those drill instructors down on Paris Island are doing more for this culture just by making good citizens than, you know, half the ministries and everybody else that are reaching out supposedly helping people. I'm sure they're doing some good. But when you see the way those DIs reach into so many young lives and not only turn them around, but give them a sense of confidence and discipline and the ability to get a task done, follow orders, work in a community, be less selfish, think of the group, and so forth. It's really remarkable. And, you know, so Kathy, I think my co-author in AWOL, experienced the same thing just watching what sort of a man her husband was. I mean, as I said before, and we talk in the book a lot, we have a lot of personal anecdotes. One of hers is to talk about the fact of how she was arrested when she was climbing over the fence at a military base to protest. And, you know, her first contact with a military person was the guy who arrested her. And now she's married to a Marine officer who's been in combat in Iraq. In fact, while we were writing AWOL, she's got her 2 little kids at home. Her husband's overseas in war. So, you know, AWOL came right out of her heart, my heart, our guts. It's not theoretical. It isn't a dry study. We do have our footnotes, and we do back up our argument. But really, this is the story of the love of a woman for her husband and the love of a father for his son, and through those people, a new love for our country. It's as simple as that.
Frank, do you think that economics plays a part in this? And I don't mean just that people may be deciding to go into other professions where they think they can earn more money and not really caring about the service part of going into the military, but the fact that the military doesn't really offer a real economic alternative to them, that it's hard to overcome those other obstacles that people may have against joining the military when they don't look at it as an option where they can really make money.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But, you know, I also think that that shows a misunderstanding on their part, if that's the case, about what service is. I mean, you know, you don't get paid the big bucks for jury duty. And if you witness an accident and don't call a cop, it's still a crime, even though you may waste 2 or 3 hours giving evidence and aren't going to get paid $100 an hour for doing it.
Yeah, but those aren't jobs.
No, but the fact is, military service was never seen as a job in this country. There was a professional officer corps, and then our armies would serve, and people would stand down after major conflicts, and the military would shrink for a while and grow bigger when we needed it. It was looked at, you know, back in the day of the gentleman farmers and our framers of our Constitution and people like George Washington as something you did. You spent a couple of years of your life when called upon to do this, and then you moved on. I mean, politics used to be like that, too. You know, it wasn't considered to be a job. You served, and you went home, went back to your factory or your farm or your family, whatever. Military service has to be seen as something to do with citizenship. I mean, one mistake I think the military has made that we point out in the book is they treat this just like another job offer. Hey, you know, and if we got a better offer, we'll do something else. But that's not what service is about. Service is about taking a time out of your life when you're putting your country first and you're putting other people first. And then you go back into another walk of life, that's fine. Now, actually, the Army does take care of its people, and so do the Marine Corps and the Navy, who stay in for a career. They have good lives, and they're well remunerated. But that kid who's weighing up whether to go to law school right away or maybe serve his or her country, really, if they read AWOL, they're going to see a lot of letters from kids who were in their position, the very few from Harvard and Princeton and other places that still go. These guys write in our book, and we quote them at length, saying these were the best choices I ever made. I learned more in my 4 years in the military, or whatever it may have been, than I did in college, in law school. All my life experiences put together did not equal this. Was it all good and fun? No, not at all. A lot of it was hard, but we learn more than we learn anywhere else. So, you know, people ought to look at this from a different point of view, of life experience, connection to their country, service rather than remuneration, and then even later in your career, goodness gracious, if you read books like, you know, Business Leadership, The Marine Corps Way, other books that we quote in the book somewhere, you find that it's no coincidence that a lot of the people who have made the most of their lives in this country economically have a military background. I mean, the discipline and the teamwork and the organizational skills you learn in the military are much better often than those offered in business schools these days anyway. So, you know, if that's all you were in it for, you do walk away knowing some things in it with a maturing process and a learning process that is really good. And by the way, I wanted to mention, if somebody wants to read a sample chapter of AWOL, they can just go to my website and click on the AWOL button, and the sample chapter will come up, and that's just frankschaefer.com.
That's S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R, frankschaefer.com. Let's get Glenn in here. You're on KMOX. Hi, say hi to Frank Schaefer.
Hi, Frank.
Hey.
XJR head.
Hi. Well done.
About 11 years.
Well done. You and my son are buddies and brothers then, even though you never met.
Yeah, more than likely. A little over 5.5 years, and well, I'm 55 years old.
Right, right.
So a little over 5.5 years.
So what do you think of what Frank is saying here?
I think he's absolutely right. I dropped out of the University of Missouri when I was 19 years old because I was bored with school and enlisted in the Marine Corps. I spent 13 months in Southeast Asia and ended up getting a commission. You know, I spent almost 11 years in the Marine Corps.
But you were drafted, right?
No.
Oh, you joined up yourself.
I enlisted.
Do you see people, let's say your kid's age?
Well, at that time, once I dropped out of college, had I not enlisted in the Marine Corps, I would have been drafted.
Gotcha.
I was...
But the real question here for both Glenn and also for you, Frank, is whether you can overcome whatever it is that has been driving people away for these last 3 decades from joining up into the military.
I don't understand it.
Glenn, I'm glad you called. I got to wrap things up here with Frank. I think one of the things you're going to have to overcome is, you know, being in a war, popular or not. It's a war where over 2,500 Americans have now given their lives and tens of thousands
sure.
have been injured and all of that. And I think that tends to dissuade people from wanting to join up. But you make great arguments in the book, and I'll send people to bookstores or my website, harrisonline.com, where it's featured and people can order it. It's called AWOL, The Unexcused Absence of America's Upper Classes from Military Service and How It Hurts Our Country. Frank, it's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Hey, it's really kind of you to have me on. Good luck.
My pleasure. Frank Schaefer here on the Paul Harris Show. It's News Talk 1120 KMOX.